Ever felt like you were just going through the motions in a relationship? You know, like the spark was gone, the connection faded.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's kind of what we're diving into today with the book of Hosea, specifically chapter 6.
Okay.
We've got excerpts from Dr. John Oswald's lecture.
Oh, right.
And honestly, his insights are, they make this ancient text feel shockingly relevant.
It is amazing. I think Hosea, even though it was written thousands of years ago, it still speaks to the core of human experience, especially when it comes to relationships and commitment and what it means to truly know and love someone.
Okay, so we're picking up where we left off with Hosea's marriage to Gomer, who was a prostitute, as this metaphor for God's relationship with Israel. Chapters 4 and 5 were all about Israel's lack of knowledge of God. But Dr. Oswald stresses that it's not just about like knowing facts about God.
It's not about being able to recite, some creed or list off God's attributes. It's about intimacy. It's about a deep experiential knowledge of God. And in the Hebrew Bible, knowing God is actually compared to a sexual embrace. I think Adam knew Eve. It's that level of closeness and connection.
That's not the kind of language you typically hear in Sunday school, right? But I get it. It's about going beyond head knowledge to like a truly intimate relationship. So how does that play out in chapter 6?
Well, the chapter opens with this really urgent call to return to the Lord and to know him. It's an invitation to turn away from idols and empty pursuits and come back to that life-giving relationship with God.
So verses 1 through 3 paint this picture of the people pleading with each other. They're saying, come on, let's go back to the Lord. Like they're finally realizing they've been chasing shadows and are desperate for something real.
And with that return comes the promise of revival and restoration. And the imagery is really beautiful. It talks about God reviving them like rain on parched land, their lives will flourish in his presence.
But then Dr. Oswald adds this caveat, this reality check that sometimes that restoration involves pain.
He uses the analogy of a doctor having to re-break a bone to set it properly.
Ouch, right.
Sometimes we need to experience the consequences of our actions, to feel the full weight of our choices in order to really grasp our need for God and allow him to do his healing work.
It's like sometimes we have to hit rock bottom before we're willing to reach out for help.
And this is where Dr. Oswald makes, I think, a really important point that really resonated with me. He says that God's ultimate goal is never destruction. Even when he allows pain or hardship in our lives, it's always, always about healing and restoration in the end.
That's so encouraging, especially when we're going through those tough seasons. It's a reminder that even in the midst of the mess, God is still working, still drawing us back to himself.
Think about a time in your own life when you went through something really difficult. Maybe it was a loss, maybe it was a failure, maybe it was just a period of deep uncertainty. Looking back, can you see how that experience, even though it was painful, might have led to growth or positive change in your life?
Yeah, it's like those times when you're forced to confront a hard truth about yourself. And it hurts, but it's ultimately what sets you free to become who you're meant to be.
Precisely. So we've got this call to return, this beautiful promise of revival. But then Hosea chapter 6 takes kind of an interesting turn in verse 4. It calls out the fleeting nature of the people's love. Their hest, as Dr. Oswald explains it, is like morning mist that disappears as soon as the sun comes up.
Okay, so hesed is a word we need to unpack because it's key to understanding this whole chapter. What does it actually mean?
It's often translated as love, mercy, or steadfast love, but it's so much more than just a feeling. It's a deep, unwavering loyalty and commitment, often from a superior to an inferior. It's about action. It's about consistently choosing what's best for someone else, even when it's hard, even when it costs you.
So it's like when a parent stays up all night with a sick child, even though they're exhausted, or when a friend forgives you after you've hurt them deeply. It's a love that goes beyond feelings to concrete action and self-sacrifice.
It's a powerful concept. And Hosea is saying that the people's his is lacking. They're all about the initial excitement, the honeymoon phase of the relationship, but they're not willing to put in the hard work of sustained love and faithfulness.
It's like they're saying, yeah, God, we love you until it gets inconvenient or requires too much of us.
And I think that's a challenge for all of us, isn't it? Where do we see that kind of fleeting love in our own lives? Where do we fall short of truly embodying his in our relationships with God and others?
It makes me think about those times when I've chosen comfort over compassion, or when I've held on to a grudge instead of offering forgiveness?
Those are tough questions.
Yeah.
But they're important ones to wrestle with.
Right.
Because the heart of Hosea's message is about moving beyond shallow expressions of love.
Okay.
To a deeper, more transformative kind of relationship, one that's rooted in Hesed.
And that's something we're going to continue exploring in the next part of our deep dive.
Yes.
We'll unpack what it looks like to cultivate Hesed in our own lives and what happens when we choose temporary pleasures over true intimacy with God.
Absolutely.
So stay tuned. So we've been unpacking this idea of Hesed, and it's clearly not your Hallmark card kind of love. Dr. Oswald calls it unwavering loyalty, concrete action, even when it costs you. But honestly, sometimes these ancient concepts feel tough to apply to my everyday life.
Yeah.
You know, how does Hesed actually play out in the 21st century?
That's a great question. I think it's helpful to look for modern day examples of that same self-sacrificial love that Hosea is talking about.
Okay.
Think about frontline workers during a pandemic.
Right.
Risking their own health to care for others. Or activists fighting for social justice, you know.
Yeah.
Often facing huge personal risk to advocate for those who are marginalized. That's Hesed in action.
You know, even on a smaller scale, I think about like those everyday heroes.
Right.
The single mom working two jobs to provide for her kids. The volunteer who spends their weekends at the soup kitchen.
Yeah.
They might not make headlines, but they're living out Hesed in a powerful way.
Absolutely. And what I find fascinating is how Dr. Oswald connects this idea of Hesed with our intimacy with God.
Okay.
He's saying that when we truly know God, not just intellectually, but experientially, it overflows into how we treat others. We become more capable of showing that same kind of unwavering love and grace.
So it's not just about like being nice or performing good deeds. It's about our actions being rooted in this deep understanding of God's love for us.
Right.
A love that's so undeserved, so freely given, that it compels us to love others in the same way.
Yes. And that's why Dr. Oswald emphasizes that true Hesed often involves sacrifice. Think about the Good Samaritan going out of his way to help a stranger who'd been beaten and robbed. That's not convenient or comfortable, but it's the embodiment of Hesed.
You know, that makes me squirm a little, because I realize how often I choose to stay comfortable rather than stepping into messy situations, you know,
yeah,
where people are hurting. It's easier to write a check than actually get involved.
It's a constant challenge, isn't it? We're wired for self-preservation. But Hesed calls us to push past those instincts and choose love, even when it's hard, even when it disrupts our plans.
Yeah.
Remember, we're talking about God's love here. And as we've seen, God's not afraid of messy situations.
Right. Speaking of messy, let's talk about that metaphor Hosea uses to describe Israel's unfaithfulness prostitution. Pretty jarring language. But Dr. Oswald makes it clear that it's not just about literal prostitution.
Right. It's about using God, or even other people, for our own selfish gain, rather than seeking genuine connection and intimacy. It's a transactional approach to relationships where it's all about what we can get out of it, not what we can give.
So maybe it's treating God like a cosmic vending machine.
Right.
Only praying when we need something.
Exactly.
Or expecting him to rubber stamp our plans without actually surrendering to his will.
Or it could be using people to fill a void in our lives, you know,
yeah,
seeking validation and affirmation rather than cultivating authentic, mutually beneficial relationships. It's a subtle but pervasive form of prostitution. And I think we've all been guilty of it at some point.
You know, it makes me think about how easily I can get caught up in the pursuit of success or pleasure.
Yeah.
Those things aren't bad in themselves, but when they become my primary focus,
right,
when they take precedence over my relationship with God or the needs of the people that I care about, then I've crossed the line.
And that's the key, isn't it? It's about our priorities, about what sits on the throne of our hearts. When we're constantly focused on what we lack, on what we need to be happy or fulfilled, we lose sight of the blessings already present of our lives. We become consumed by a sense of entitlement, always wanting more, never feeling satisfied.
And that insatiable hunger can lead to a transactional approach to everything, even our relationships.
Right.
We start seeing people as commodities.
Yeah.
Valuing them only for what they can do for us.
Right.
Rather than appreciating them for who they are.
That's the complete opposite of Hesed, which is about giving freely, without strings attached, without expecting anything in return.
It's the difference between a contract and a covenant, right?
Yeah.
A contract is about a specific exchange of goods or services.
Right.
But a covenant is about a deep, abiding commitment, a bond that can't be broken.
Exactly. And when we operate from that place of genuine, self-giving love, our relationships become sources of joy and mutual enrichment. rather than transactions designed to fill a void or meet a need.
Okay, so we've got he's this radical self-sacrificial love, and we've got prostitution, this self-serving transactional approach to relationships. Hosea is using these stark contrasts to paint a picture of God's heartbreak over Israel's unfaithfulness.
And what's incredible is that even in the midst of his disappointment, God doesn't abandon his people. He's not vindictive or vengeful. He still longs for them, desires to restore them, to bring them back into a right relationship with him.
Which brings us to the end of chapter 6, where we get this seemingly paradoxical statement. A harvest is appointed, meaning judgment is coming. But God also desires to restore his people. How do we make sense of that? How can there be both judgment and restoration?
Well, Dr. Oswald suggests that sometimes we need to experience the natural consequences of our actions.
Okay.
That harvest of our choices, to fully awaken to our need for God.
Okay.
It's not that God enjoys punishing us. It's that he allows us to experience the natural outcomes of our decisions, hoping that it will lead us back to him.
It's like that saying, good judgment comes from experience, and a lot of that comes from bad judgment.
Exactly. And that process can be painful, even devastating at times, but it's never pointless. It's always an opportunity for growth, for transformation, for deeper intimacy with God.
This reminds me of those times in my own life when I've been so stubborn, so convinced that I knew better than God, that I ignored wise counsel and charged ahead with my own plans. And inevitably, it led to pain. To consequences that I could have avoided if I just listened.
But even in those moments when we feel the weight of our mistakes, God doesn't shame us or reject us. He meets us in our brokenness, offering his forgiveness and his healing grace.
So even though judgment is a reality, even though we reap what we sow, God's ultimate desire is always restoration.
Yes.
He longs to heal us, to forgive us, to welcome us back into his loving embrace, no matter how far we've strayed.
That's the beauty of grace, isn't it? It's not about earning God's favor or dodging his wrath. It's about receiving his unconditional love and mercy, even when we don't deserve it.
That really resonates with me because I think we all have areas in our lives where we long to be made whole, to experience healing and renewal.
Absolutely. And that's where Hosea's message becomes so relevant to our lives today. He's pointing us to a God who is passionate about restoring brokenness, about bringing life out of deadness, about redeeming what's been lost or damaged.
So how do we tap into that restoration?
Yeah.
How do we access that wellspring of God's healing grace? What does it look like practically?
Well, I think it starts with acknowledging our need.
Okay.
We have to be willing to admit that we've messed up, that we've wandered away from God, that we've settled for prostitution when what we truly crave is intimacy.
That could be a tough pill to swallow, admitting that we can't fix ourselves. That we need God's help. It requires humility, right?
It does, but there's such freedom in that surrender. When we finally let go of the illusion of self-sufficiency, we open ourselves to the transformative power of God's grace.
So it's about confessing our sins, turning away from those destructive patterns, and choosing to walk in step with God, aligning our lives with his will and purposes.
Yes.
But, you know, sometimes I get tripped up on that word surrender.
Right.
It sounds passive, like I'm just supposed to roll over and let life happen to me.
That's a great point. And it's a common misconception. Surrender isn't about passivity at all. It's about actively choosing to align our will with God's will, to cooperate with his spirit as he works in and through us. It's about becoming a willing participant in God's redemptive plan for our lives.
So it's not about becoming a doormat. It's about becoming a warrior, fighting for what's right, standing against injustice, partnering with God to bring his kingdom to earth. That sounds a lot more exciting than just giving up.
Exactly. It's about taking all that energy and passion that we often misdirect towards selfish pursuits and channeling it towards something much greater, something truly transformative and life-giving.
That's such a powerful image. And it leads me to wonder, we've been talking about personal transformation, but Hosea was speaking to the nation of Israel. Is there a message here about societal restoration as well?
Absolutely. God's desire for restoration isn't limited to individuals. He longs to heal broken communities, to restore justice, to bring peace and reconciliation to a world that's fractured and divided.
So how do we participate in that larger work of restoration? How do we become agents of healing and reconciliation in our own spheres of influence? Where do we even begin?
Well, I think it starts with living out the principles we've been discussing in our own lives.
Okay.
As we allow God to transform us individually, as we cultivate yeast in our relationships, and turn away from the prostitution of using God and others for our own selfish gain, we become beacons of light in a dark world.
It's like that Gandhi quote, "Be the change you want to see in the world."
Yeah.
But it's not about striving or self-effort. It's about letting God's transformative work take root in us so deeply that it overflows into everything we do.
Exactly. It's about being a reflection of God's love and grace in tangible ways.
Okay.
In our families, our workplaces, our communities. And as we shine that light, it creates a ripple effect.
Yeah.
Touching the lives of those around us and contributing to a more just, compassionate, and whole society.
You know, I'm starting to see how Hosea's message, though, written thousands of years ago, is incredibly relevant to the challenges we face today.
It is. And I think the key takeaway is that we're not alone in this work of restoration.
Okay.
We have a God who's passionately pursuing us, longing to heal our brokenness and make us new.
Yeah.
He's also inviting us to partner with him in that work.
Right.
Not just in our individual lives, but in the world around us.
That's an incredibly hopeful message, especially when the news headlines can feel so overwhelming.
Right.
It's a reminder that even in the midst of all the chaos and brokenness, God is still at work. And he's inviting us to join him in bringing healing and restoration to our world.
And that's something we'll continue to explore in the final part of our deep dive. We'll unpack some practical ways to cultivate Hesed in our own lives and look at what it means to truly embrace God's invitation to wholeness and restoration.
You know, as we've been diving into Hosea chapter 6, one thing that keeps coming back to me is that God doesn't just want to forgive us.
Right.
He wants to transform us.
Absolutely.
It's not enough to just say, like, we're sorry.
Right.
And try to do better.
Yeah.
He's after something much deeper, isn't he?
Absolutely. Dr. Oswalt uses this really powerful phrase, heart transformation.
Okay.
It's not about behavior modification. It's about God getting to the root of who we are, changing us from the inside out.
It's like he's saying, I don't want to just put a Band-Aid on your wounds. I want to make you whole, completely new.
Yeah.
But that kind of transformation,
yeah,
it doesn't sound easy.
It's not. Remember that image of God's words being like a surgeon's scalpel cutting away the infected parts?
Oh, yeah.
That's the process of sanctification, and it can be painful.
I can relate to that.
Yeah.
There have been times in my life where I've resisted change, clung to my old ways, even when they were clearly hurting me or others.
Right.
It's like I wanted the healing without the surgery.
We all do that, right? Change is hard, even when it's for our own good.
Yeah.
But God is relentless in his love. And sometimes that love involves allowing us to experience the consequences of our choices.
Yeah.
To feel the sting of that scalpel so that we can finally wake up and say, okay, I need help. I can't do this on my own.
So how do we learn to embrace that process?
Yeah.
How do we develop a posture of surrender, trusting that God knows what's best for us, even when it feels like he's breaking us apart?
For me, it starts with humility, admitting that I don't have it all figured out, that my ways aren't always God's ways.
Mm.
Letting go of the need to be in control and trusting that even when things are painful, God is still good. He still loves me.
Yeah.
And he's working all things together for my good thing.
It's like saying, okay, God, I'm letting go of the steering wheel. I trust you to get us where we need to go, even if the road is bumpy.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest.
Yeah.
That surrender thing.
Right.
Sometimes it feels a little passive, like I'm just supposed to sit back and let God do whatever he wants.
That's a common misconception. Surrender isn't passivity. It's active participation.
Okay.
It's about aligning our will with God's will.
Okay.
Cooperating with his spirit as he works in and through us.
Right.
Think about an athlete training for a competition.
Okay.
They have to surrender to their coach's guidance.
Right.
Submit to a rigorous training regimen, even when it's grueling. But they're not passive.
Right.
They're actively engaged in the process of becoming stronger, faster, more skilled.
So in a way, surrender is about becoming more fully alive.
Yes.
More fully who God created us to be. It's about embracing the adventure of transformation, even when it's challenging.
Exactly. And remember, we're not in this alone.
Right.
We have the Holy Spirit empowering us, guiding us,
yeah,
giving us the strength to overcome temptation and make choices that align with God's will. It's like having a personal trainer.
Oh, yeah.
A constant companion.
Yeah.
Cheering us on every step of the way.
That's a really encouraging image. You know, we've been talking a lot about personal transformation, but Hosea was addressing the nation of Israel.
Right.
Is there a message here about societal transformation as well?
Yeah.
Can this idea of heart transformation apply to communities, even to the world as a whole?
Absolutely. God's desire for restoration isn't limited to individuals. He longs to heal broken systems, to see justice flow like a river, to bring peace and reconciliation to a world that's fractured and divided.
So if God is the ultimate heart surgeon,
yeah,
how do we participate in that larger work of healing? What does it look like to be agents of transformation in our own spheres of influence?
It starts with living out what we're learning,
okay,
being the change we want to see. As we allow God to transform us individually, as we cultivate haze in our relationships and resist the temptation to use God or others for our own selfish gain, we become catalysts for change.
It's like that ripple effect, right? A single stone thrown into a pond creates waves that spread outward.
Yeah.
In the same way, our transformed lives can have a profound impact on the world around us, inspiring others, challenging injustice, spreading hope and healing.
Exactly. And it's not about striving or earning brownie points.
Right.
It's about letting God work through us, allowing his love and grace to flow through our words, our actions, our very presence.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Hosea chapter 6, what's the final takeaway you want to leave our listeners with today?
Well, I keep coming back to this idea. God is in the business of restoration.
Okay.
Not just of individuals, but of communities.
Right.
Of nations.
Yeah.
Of the whole world.
Yeah.
He longs to heal what's broken, to make all things new. But here's the key. We have to be willing participants in that process.
Right.
We have to open our hands and let go of the things that are holding us back, the things that are keeping us from experiencing the fullness of his love and grace. So the question I want to leave you with is this. What needs to be restored in your life? What are you holding on to that needs to be surrendered? And are you ready to say yes to God's invitation to wholeness, to transformation, to a life of radical love and reckless grace?
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Hosea chapter 6.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
And we'll see you next time as we continue to explore the depths of God's word and its relevance for our lives today.